we kick off hour number two of the program. This segment brought to you by Alumni Hall and, of course, online at alumnihall.com. Proud video sponsors of 3 and Out. Get all your Tennessee gear at Alumni Hall. You got two football games left. The weather's gotten cold. We have snow on the ground.
They got hoodies. They got jackets. They got sweatpants.
There's a lot of snow left out here at the Fan Run Studios.
It only got above freezing for like an hour yesterday.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Billy, will you hand me that can opener?
Shut up. Why didn't you do that during the break? Like, stop interrupting the segment. We're talking sports over here. You
don't have to say that in the
wagon.
Microphone.
This is part of the show.
No, you eating fruit is not part of the show. You eating all this crappy meat would have been. Now
what
it's just...
What can opener is this?
What are you...
Push the button. Let's go to John's
mute
tweet.
Yourself and get tweet on here.
Yeah, we need more of your reaction on the basketball game. 865-546-8200. John tweets up first this hour. What's up, tweet?
Hello.
Hello. Did you watch the game last night?
Yeah, I haven't missed a basketball game in quite some time.
There you go. The positive steps. Good.
I don't miss basketball games.
Okay.
They're actually good.
Do you watch other teams play basketball, tweet, or just Tennessee?
If there's somebody we might play type situation,
okay.
I'll watch more of other teams play college, which makes me, I guess, a little bit hypocritical with my football thing, but...
They are a little easier to take in, 2 hours. You get a nice halftime break. The games move pretty fast. I get it.
It's more like we'll play Kansas later this year, so I might peek in at one of those games. But I won't just sit and, watch it. I'll be doing something else.
Yeah. Background noise. Yeah. I got you.
I might flip it on. I'm trying to start with is it just me or does James look lost defensively? Like, he'll just completely lose his man at times, and he gets blown by into the lane.
Honestly, he looks just kind of lost in general.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Okay. All right.
Which is weird. Like, he looks more lost than Kamwa. I would say he looks more lost than Gaines. He makes fewer mistakes, and he gets to stay on the court longer. But he doesn't look confident right now on either end of the floor.
Why did Gaines get yanked so quick?
Turnover.
It was a turnover. That's what it was. I think it was like
it was a turnover and then a foul.
Turned it over and then he came down. And he fouled.
Yeah, it was
the same
possession. Yeah, he turned it over, chased it down, got a foul. Then there were his 2 minutes.
I tell you this: the fat guy for them could play a little bit.
That one pass he had, where he like spun in the lane and then like no looked from his hip underhanded. That was a good play for the big man.
I thought we were losing for a second when he did that. I said, oh no.
I kind of thought the same. I was like, man, that was a really good play. Is this guy for real?
When they were at their best last year, it was Ja Morant usually driving, and then if Ja didn't have a shot, he could dump it down to Cowart, who's the big guy.
Heavy seat.
Cowart, yeah.
Yeah, he got that 3-point play on Fulkerson to get his fourth foul. And the game was pretty tight at that point, I think. I was like, oh, goodness.
Fulky picked up what looked like one really cheap one early, and then he had two. And I think that's what's got us in trouble early was you didn't have Fulky and Bowden, because I think both of those guys had two in the first half, if I'm remembering correctly.
Yeah,
it was two in the first 8 minutes.
Yeah, and I thought I think it was the second foul on both of those guys were just really, really ticky-tack bad calls.
You're gonna get them both ways. I really didn't even notice the officials throughout the game, and I'm not cry about officials guy, but
no, I didn't think the officials were particularly bad or good last night. I just thought that those two specific fouls, when they happened, they were pretty close to each other. I agree. I just think it against those two players specifically and what the fouls were, I thought it was a little ticky tack, and I thought it took us off of our, not that we had much rhythm, but it pretty much prevented us from finding one in the first half.
The officials were calling it close there at the beginning, and then as the game kind of carried on, they were letting more
More go, which was – I'm fine with that, I guess. I just don't like it when it's inconsistent. Like, I don't like it when they start super tight, and then I feel like that's what happens when we play Kentucky. Mm-hmm. They'll start the game and call it super, super tight, and then all of a sudden it becomes a melee, and we've adjusted to the super tight calls, and then we don't get calls.
Or the opposite. There was that game where no one – remember there was no whistle for like 12 minutes in that one game?
Yeah, and then we're like, okay, well, if they can battle and not get called, then we're going to do that, and then they started calling fouls on us.
Nate or Chris, whichever one is more – what did they go to with Turner in the second half where it was like he was – I don't want to call it left, or if you're looking at the TV screen near side, it was like almost like a two-man game with him and Folky or whoever was over there, maybe Pons.
Yeah,
and they went to that for like the last 8 minutes, and they couldn't figure it out.
They call
what
it money. They call
money.
It money.
Money.
They just put it. It's really, it really is. You take your best guard, whoever you want the money set to be, and they are really the only player that you're looking to try and pass the ball to, if possible. You put your two bigs that you want to play the two-man game with off the block a little bit outside the paint, so he can curl either way. He can decide whichever way he wants to play off of. And the two, what I'll call the two guard spots out high, doesn't mean they have to be guards playing out there, but those two players basically just work to swing the ball, to rotate the ball to both halves of the court. And that player, the Lamonte in this case, once he picks a side, will work to curl off the pin down, or if his defender tries to go under the screen, he can flare out. And once he catches the ball over there, if they want to, he can kind of point and call for the ball screen on that side also. But I mean, it's basically the simplest set you can run. Rick Barnes loves it. I mean, he talked about it in clinics for the last 20 years. I mean, but basically it's just a way to feature one guy, and the good thing about it is it makes everybody on the court kind of know exactly how you're trying to pass the ball and when how things are going to happen. And what's funny is when a player's playing that spot well, it doesn't mean that they're going to take every shot, because what happens is
he had a lot of dishes.
Yeah, those screen defenders end up trying to help so much that when they catch the ball with an edge on their guy, all of a sudden somebody helps, and then boom, you know, and that one, the prettiest play of the night, I thought, late was when Lamonte beat his guy, another guy helped, and it was actually Fulkerson from the backside who came in wide open for the dunk and one, and it was basically over at that point.
Was that little slip pass he threw, kind of, or was that Bound that threw that to Fulky on that big dunk?
I'm trying
to remember. One of them was driving.
It was Lamonte. He didn't even look. Just kind of flipped it in between two defenders.
I tweeted it out from the camera angle from the baseline.
You called it a dime, as I recall.
Yeah. Well,
I asked to remove that from the nomenclature.
Why do you not like the term dime?
I mean, I don't know. The dish. I don't know. The dime.
Don't like dropping dimes.
How about Dane Bradshaw's aerial fantasy on air?
That got awkward and hurt.
Big redheaded guy. Don't blame him.
They're trying to promote
I'm not going to knock that. Ariel's, she's a cartoon babe.
I'm sorry, I apologize. Did you guys catch the post game interview with Bowden?
No.
There was just an interesting thing going on in the background throughout the interview. You'll have to go back and watch it if you can.
Ooh, I love Easter egg hunts.
I put a picture up. If you see it, you'll see what I'm talking about. Just tweet when you see it. You'll figure it out. See you, boys.
10-4. Thanks, tweet.
And, Nate, what makes that motion offense, or what made it different last night, is Turner really took advantage of curling instead of fading out to the three-point line.
Mm-hmm.
Most of, I would say 90% of the time, he went directly to the three-point line last season. And that's one thing that I picked up on in the exhibition game, was he took the back screen or the back cut when it was available to him. Last night he was taking the curl, which was available to him. And it's just a smarter offensive basketball play.
Yeah, I mean, I think Dane Bradshaw was actually talking about that when Lamonte at one point did catch it off the curl really quickly. He took, I think, one or two dribbles into the paint, which, of course, caused everyone to crash down, and you had Bowden wide open for a three.
Penetration. Kick out.
And Lamonte's just going to do it differently than you think of guys that get to the rim. You think typically of a guy that's super quick, that can first step, blow by his guy, and get there. Hmm. Lamonte is almost like an old man basketball driver.
I was going to say he
gets an angle.
Yeah, he's
uses his body.
He can't just use elite speed and quickness. He's a little more methodical, a little more process based, but he's good at it. I mean, he had good control of the ball.
He kind of lulls the help guy to sleep sometimes,
yeah,
too. Like, well,
he's, a couple
he times
does have
he,
good hesitation. Like, he does go slow to quick well.
Right.
Like, first step off of a pause. Like, he does have a pretty good first step.
A couple of times I felt like the Murray State help defender was, like, there, but just wasn't prepared for him to actually shoot the layup. On a couple of those layups he made in the second half, it's like, their guy was there. he just kept waiting for him to pass. Like, he's about to pass, right? About to pass. Right? Oh, crap, he's already scooped this thing real quick.
Right, yeah.
And it's up on the backboard, and I can't get to it, and he's made a layup. So it was.
It's like he jumps without looking like he's about to jump,
yeah,
too.
Yeah.
So they don't know he's. It's like they don't even realize he's going up for a shot until he's halfway into it around the basket, if that makes sense.
I mean, he was good at that last year. It was funny because he was more effective scoring at the rim than Jordan Bone was, even though Bone was taller, faster, quicker, and jumped higher. Like, it made no sense. But Lamonte just, I guess because he's a little slower. He's developed that ability to do those things. It's like when Josiah James came in for the visit, and Lamonte showed him how, when he attacks the rim in traffic, how
protect
he actually
ball.
Covers the ball yeah, yeah. up on his way to shooting a layup.
And he's really good at being off balance but under control around the rim, as far as like contorting his body to one side of the rim or mm-hmm. the other, especially on like reverse layups. Again, kind of to protect himself and shield from the defender. He's good at using the rim as a, this is going to sound weird, defender for the defender. Like, he gets underneath the rim on a drive, and then to avoid getting a shot blocked, he goes up real tight to the rim and protects the ball. Like, he's just, I don't know, he just has really good feel, I guess is what I would say, and good touch around the rim, especially for a guy who's not that tall.
Out of the main guys that played last season, only Grant Williams and Kyle Alexander had a better percentage from inside the arc than Lamonte.
Lamonte.
He shot 57%.
Makes sense.
I realize he probably wants to be the three-point killer, but he is very, very good inside the three-point line and good inside the paint. I mean, was it Ole Miss? He hit like three straight pull-up jumpers when you really needed it last year, basically won you the game. I think he had like eight straight points in less than 2 minutes in the second half. None of them were threes. He's totally capable of doing that. And I think, especially if Pons can continue to hit that three, that's only going to draw defenders in and allow for kickouts to Pons, Bowden, hopefully Josiah James, hopefully. Maybe Jalen Johnson. Hopefully Josiah James.
We'll take you around the world of college basketball from last night.
Just a great night.
A lot of SEC teams in action. And, of course, the huge monumental upset that has Kentucky fans livid. Also, Memphis in action. A lot of teams Tennessee has on the schedule played. We'll take you around not only the SEC, but the nation on the flip side. Stick with us right here on 3 and Out. Welcome back to 3 and Out here on Fan Run Radio. Last night it was college basketball everywhere. And the number one team in the country was playing.
At home.
Yeah, home, Rupp Arena.
Against Indiana.
Evansville, Indiana. Just Evansville.
Shouts out to the Lewis family.
They're labeled the number one team in the country, but I would give four other teams that distinction before I would have given it to Kentucky last night.
Well, now it's easy for you to say that. I mean, if you said that on yesterday's show, I think you'd have gotten more street cred. Not that that was a question on
yesterday's
show.
From watching the Champions Classic, I know they beat Michigan State, but as a whole, I was like, Kentucky, I'd probably have them as the fourth best team in that tournament.
Okay, well, the fourth best team in that tournament, whether, you know, top 10 team in the country, at home, Rupp Arena, whatever.
Yeah.
They were still the number one team for, you know, all intents and purposes. Evansville rolls in, and I had no idea. I noticed the score was, like, tied at one point. During the first half, it's kind of doing some other things, trying to make sure I was all ready and set for Tennessee's tip at 9. And then I texted Billy at one point because it was like tied in the second half. And I was like, are you watching Kentucky? Like, what's going on there? And he filled me and said, they really should be losing. And when I tuned in, they did not look like the better team. I mean, Evansville was just taking it to them, taking it to the rack, running clock. Driving and kicking for three, and Kentucky goes down 67-64, and it didn't feel that close.
Evansville. What?
The Purple Aces.
They're just young guys. They're still trying to find their offensive flow. Bunch of new guys.
They're always young.
Duke's young, too. They beat Central Arkansas by 50 last night.
It's like Calipari's.
Shut up.
What's a good comparison? One and dones is usually what both those teams have.
Calipari always does this. He always says his team is young, they're not playing well, they're going to lose games.
He didn't do that as much last night. Last night he said he took the blame. Like he admitted it.
Yeah.
He said we were bad. This is a good lesson for us, but this is not acceptable. Cuz I'm with you, but like yeah, he always has a young team that gets a lot better, but they don't lose to Evansville. They lost to Evansville at home.
Evansville is the number one study abroad program in America.
Yeah, because no one wants to study in Evansville. No offense to Evansville. Have a great fall festival there.
Top 10 best Midwest value school. You get great value at Evansville.
Kentucky was very selfish offensively. They only had 6 assists all night.
Very sad. I mean, Lamonte had 15 on his own.
14, yeah.
14, sorry.
The last time they won anything of relevance was 1999 when they won the Missouri Valley Conference.
Hmm.
20 years.
I'd say last night counts, so they're back.
They were 0-2 all time against number one teams until last night. I mean, 1-3 against number one teams, that's a pretty good record.
And Kentucky had a 52-game home winning streak against non-conference or unranked foes, one of the two.
Evansville.
Yep.
That's just – what is Purple Aces?
The Purple Aces. They have 2,526 students.
2,000 students.
Yeah, that includes their graduate program. Ooh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, looking up their coach right now. He's been trending. His name's Walter McCarty.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well, yeah, he played at Kentucky. Yeah.
Ah, okay.
He was an assistant coach with Brad Stevens, the Celtics.
He knows the drill. He knows how to beat those young Kentucky teams. He's been one.
Apparently,
he was on the 96 championship team.
Apparently, at shoot around, the announcers got to watch, and he had been telling his kids all week, to push tempo, take anything you get open in transition, because that'll be our best chance to score. But if you don't, then we're running late into the shot clock, and we're going to attack the rim at the end of the shot clock. And they just kept doing that.
Mischief managed. They nailed it.
They hit threes out in transition. They then held the ball. They got into the paint and then kicked out for three late in the shot clock, and it was just trouble. And they played great defense. I mean, Kentucky scored 60.
You want to say that number again?
64 points.
Producer to the stars over there just muted you mid-sentence.
I noticed.
64 points. Well, there was another big game against top 25 teams last night in the Phil Knight Invitational.
Oh, yeah.
Oregon-Memphis. You know, Memphis, a lot of people thought, oh, they might be the best team in the country. Oh, but then Wiseman got, oh, well, we're going to play him anyway. Yeah. They lose 82-74 to Oregon. Oregon very balanced, 41 points in each half. Memphis, 35 points in the first half, 39 in the second. Again, 82-74, your final. That's with Wiseman playing. Played 22 minutes, 5 of 8, 14 points. 2 turnovers, no assists. He did have 12 rebounds, though. Very sad. Memphis and Kentucky lose on a night in which Tennessee wins.
Missouri lost, too.
I saw that.
People,
Xavier.
Throw that in there.
People taller than 7 Overtime. Feet usually have easier opportunities to get rebounds. You said Wiseman had 12.
Thank you, Davey.
Great stat.
Great stuff. You're really on your game today.
Do what I can.
Maybe mute your mic as you eat and chew.
I'm all right. Oh, gosh, please.
Davey, but seriously, just shh.
Mm. Auburn almost lost. 70-69 on the road at South Alabama.
If you want to look ahead real quick.
Yeah?
Oh, yeah. What?
No, I was just seeing that.
Washington played Mount St. Mary's last night. Mount St. Mary's was 1-1 coming into the game. Washington beat them 56-46.
Washington's been odd. They seem to be kind of like not hot and then hot.
They got 7 points from their bench. They only played 4 players off their bench. Only one got more than 10 minutes. Bay. Was his last name.
They beat Baylor when they were top 20 team, 67-64, to start the season.
Yeah, Isaiah Stewart is really good at basketball.
16 points, played 34 minutes. He was 7 of 10 from the field, 5 rebounds and assists, 5 blocks, 1 turnover.
He's going to be a problem Saturday.
We need to try to get him in foul trouble, I think. I think foul trouble for him would be a good start.
What were Jaden McDaniel's stats? He's our other five.
39 minutes, 2 of 9 from the field, 11 rebounds, 4 points. Not a great night scoring the ball, but he did grab 11 rebounds.
They hold Mount St. Mary's to 46.
I'm sorry. I take all that back. My screen jumped. He was 2 of 9. He scored 5 points. He had 9 rebounds. 5 turnovers for McDaniels. If we can play like we played in the second half, I think we can play with Washington. I'm not dreading this game.
The Washington game is Saturday, 5 o'clock tip-off.
It's on ESPN Plus.
It's on ESPN Plus.
I don't get that.
$4.99 a month. No, or $5.99 a month. One of those two.
You compare it with Disney Plus.
You can cancel it any time. I mean, there might be Tennessee fans that just buy the thing just for this game and then cancel it at the end
of
the month.
You get Hulu with that too, Billy.
It is kind of annoying, but it is what it is, I guess.
Real quick on the Kentucky loss, the last time they lost a game like that in November or December was back in 2009 when they lost to VMI, the first game of the season.
VMI?
Yep, Virginia Military Institution,
right.
I believe.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That was the team with Jody Meeks and Patrick Patterson.
Jody Meeks. I could do without ever hearing that name again.
Thank you. I believe their KenPom before the game had them winning every game of the whole season.
Kentucky?
Yeah.
So much for that.
Yeah, they're now.
I mean, I don't think that's the Kentucky you can expect to see night in and night out. But
actually, it still has them winning every other game the entire season.
Sure.
Yeah, but he has the projected record at 24-7.
Sure. But
well, you're
an individual. Yeah.
Individual games. Should win them all, according to KenPom, but obviously it's basketball. You're going to have bad nights, like against Evansville at home in game two after you just beat
Michigan State.
By 7.
Speaking of looking ahead, they play Mount St. Mary's.
Oh, they get 22nd. Look out. They just gave Washington a game.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. But it's just a really great night when Memphis and Kentucky lose in basketball. Tennessee wins. After you just beat Kentucky in football. I mean, like, that's what's so great is Tennessee officially sent Kentucky fans into basketball season with the win Saturday night. Welcome to basketball season, Evansville!
Gotcha!
Boom! Hoosier State, just purple acing all over those people.
Don't mess with
you love to see
State
it.
Of Indiana in basketball.
They know their stuff.
Yeah, that's the way it goes. We'll get to the phone calls on the flip side. Stick with us right here. Tower 2, 3 and out. The In the Breaks podcast today is going to be lit. Oh, man. Woo. Talking college basketball. Tennessee, big win last night. Got to get those wins. I saw a few tweets about this. Now, we need Murray State to just surprise everybody. Sneak up and beat them all. We want that to be a nice little non-com mid-major win come tournament selection process. Let's go.
They don't play any other big-name team, so...
Good. Have a great record.
Yeah.
Be a paper tiger. That's fine.
KenPom is projecting them to win 20 games this year.
There you go.
What's our... Are we back up to 20 now from KenPom?
Good question.
Did he crawl us back up to 20 wins?
20-10.
Let's go. Gaining wins by beating Murray State.
Mm-hmm.
Future wins, of course. I imagine that was a projected win on KenPom last night, but just making sure.
It was.
Yeah.
Cover the spread, too. 12.5-point favorite. You won by 19.
Yep.
Biggest lead of the night was the one you closed with. That's how you finish right there.
Yeah, I saw a lot of people kind of angry at halftime. They're like, golly, I bet on Tennessee. There's no way they're covering.
Well, even if you weren't betting, you were angry at halftime last night. It was not a good effort on either side of the ball. And, it took a little wake-up call at halftime, I guess, as old Barnes peeled a little paint, got the guys going, and – Jordy said, just give me the rock. I'm going to go ahead and score a little bit. And he did so.
All right, let's get to the phone lines. Are you eating the Spam right now?
Yeah, it's so salty.
Good.
That's to cover up the nastiness that
is mechanically
produced
chicken and pork.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to Seth. I think I'd rather talk to Seth than you right now.
Amen.
What's up, Seth?
Good morning, guys.
Morning, Seth.
What a good win for that basketball team that was.
Yes.
And I'm
great second
I
half.
Was, yeah, I, you know, I don't know. I've never seen us run it before, but where we were setting that pin down screen and getting the ball immediately to Lamonte Turner off of that was probably the best offense we had all night. And I really thought it really helped the offense kind of break down, because they were kind of running that, what, one through, they were running like a little 1-3-1, and we were running that little pin down, and it kind of sucked everybody in, and then he could just kick it to anybody or dish it to the man who was sitting under the rim multiple times. I really felt like that offense, I've never seen us run that before. I know we've ran the pin downs like to get a cut to the basket and pass it and just lay it up, but the pin down and getting the ball and just allowing Lamonte or Bowden to just dribble off of it and kind of see what they wanted to do. I hadn't really seen that. We didn't really see that a whole lot last year, at least in my mind. Maybe you guys can say different. Because I was really disappointed in the offense, and we just kept running the old pin down and try to get a cut to the basket. And I'm like, why aren't we running pick and roll with like Josiah James or Lamonte Turner and just trying to kick to somebody? You know, like modern day basketball should be played. You know, so. But I felt like it was a really good offensive adjustment in the second half.
Yeah, I don't remember what Tennessee did against the zone. I do remember the few possessions there where Murray State tried to go to the kind of extended 1-3-1 out of a timeout, and then they went back into man-to-man. Barnes runs that money set a lot, but last year I think it looked a little different because you had Admiral and Grant working. You had Admiral typically on the outside, and you had Grant setting screens, and so you're looking more for those guys. You know, you're looking to get them the basketball anytime that their guy kind of helps too much or, you know, shows too much off the screen. And yeah. Last night, I think it just looked differently because they're reading the defense. It's kind of like playing RPO in football. Like, those guys are supposed to read how they're defended off the screen and then make the defender wrong either direction. And then if the help defender overhelps, then that's where the nice little slip passes come from. And Lamonte, just, he did a great job reading it the right way and making the right decisions last night.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think you've got to, you know, Lamonte, in the first half, actually most of the game, I was kind of disappointed in Lamonte. And then I saw that he had like 11 assists, and I kind of had to immediately change my attitude because I was like, well, he's creating opportunities for everybody else. I saw Billy, you know, tweeted out about him playing within the system. And, you know, I really think that's a really good point. But we've got to have Jordan Bowden just play like that every night. Like, I don't even know if he has to hit those shots like he did last night. But he's just got to have that killer mentality and just go into the game and just be ready to shoot at a moment's notice. And, you know, he's probably going to have to be your guy that you're just going to have to ride with. You know, I think Pons is good as far as spotting up and shooting. I don't know if you can really rely on him for, you know, off the dribble stuff, but Jordan Bowden's going to have to be your guy. You just kind of ride, and if he shoots well, then you have a good chance of winning. And if he doesn't, then, you know, you may have to find your offense in some other ways. But I think our best offense is trying to find Jordan Bowden his shot and everybody else playing off of him.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Seth. I agree. I think Bowden has got to, I mean, he just needs to go into every game thinking, I'm a scorer.
Yeah.
And it felt like last night in the first half, he didn't have the mentality. In the second half, he did. And, I mean, let's say he misses some of those shots in the second half. Well, you still win the game going away. Like, even if he's not as hot, he still needs to take those. And really, with this team, they don't have a lot of prototypical monster seven-footer type rebounders. But when you have Pons and Fulkerson and Conwell on the court and Bowden puts up a three, like a slightly longer rebound, I feel like this team is really built.
Yeah, we're suited for that.
We're
yeah.
built to hawk those balls down. Those balls that kind of end up landing on the free throw line instead of inside the paint. Like we're built to at least get our hands on those balls and tap them around and create second chance opportunities off the offensive boards.
With Bowden, it's kind of like in football, throwing the ball deep to keep the defense honest. Like even if he starts the game off 0-for-3 from deep, like you still want him to shoot that ball, because eventually it's going to go in. The past two seasons, he's started the season out on fire and like leading the NCAA two seasons ago with 3-point percentage. And then this year, I mean, he's up in the 60, I think he's shooting 67% right now from three. So I think you got to, I think Bowden has to come out and be aggressive to keep the defense honest.
Makes sense to me. I mean, it's just got to, it's kind of that finding the differences between last year's team and this year's team. And it kind of, we saw it kind of happen during the game last night. Let's go back to the phone lines and grab Rod. Rod, you're on three and out.
Are you sure this morning?
Last night was a good night, Rod.
It was a good night. I got a lot I want to cover here now. If you remember a couple weeks back, I called in and gave you Gary's scout report. You remember that?
Yeah, Rod.
I got on told Gary, I went and found him after the game last night down there in the tunnel, and I told Gary, I said, you son gun, Gary, he's right on. He told us that Josiah's just offensively, that he's not as aggressive as he needs to be. I told him I didn't believe him when he told me how good Pons is shooting. Remember, I told him, he said, every time he walks to the gym, Pons is knocking it down. And my God, boys, after the first game, I thought it's kind of aberration. But after last night, you start thinking, man, we might rely on Pons a lot.
All of a sudden, Pons is a shooter. Who knew?
Yeah, and I'd like to have been in that locker room there at halftime last night and seen what Barnes, he couldn't have been happy with 44 points in the first half. Held them suckers to 19 in the second half. That's pretty dang impressive defensive turnaround right there.
Yeah, I said it a little bit earlier. I would imagine that they need a new coat of paint in the locker room because there's no way Barnes was at all positive. It was an abysmal first half. As Rod said, you gave up 44, hold them to 19 in the second. You scored 35 in the first and then dumped 47 on them in the second half. You locked down on defense. You got the offense going. A lot of transition threes late that kind of helped help push the lead out. And this is we've kind of said that. You know, you're not really you're not a big team.
Yeah.
You're tall, you're athletic, but you're not the bruising team that you were last year. It seems like this team is a little bit more built to run, and I like us shooting threes on the move, especially Bowden. I've said it for 2 years now. If his feet are set, he tends to miss more shots than if he's pulling up off the dribble or coming up off a screen. If he's running down the court, I just like those shots for him. I don't know why that's the case. He just seems like he's a better shooter when he doesn't have time to think about it.
Well, this year seems going to be a lot more live and die by that three ball. I mean, that's just for the size, especially if we get focusing down there in the foul trouble like he was last night. Which, if I'm the other team, I'm going right at him, getting him out of the game. We got to get that calm wall. We got to get him kind of built up and get going. You see some flashes of potential, but we really need somebody else to be able to come off the bench and help there in the post. But I tell you, I said it to Jens when I gave him Gary's scouting report, and I think you guys have always agreed with me, but Bowden, he's the key. We come and go as the team goes. I was sitting there in the first half, sitting there with the buddy and thinking, just telling him, man, I don't know about this team just because we're so streaky. Bowden's streaky, Turner's streaky. And I can just see us going into some offensive spells where we just can't score the ball well. And you saw a little bit of that in the first. You saw the other end of it in the second half there when we just started heating up. But it's good that even when Turner, 14 assists, no turnovers in 39 minutes is phenomenal. And that he's normally a ball first, looking for a shot kind of guy. And the fact that he settled in and kind of took on his role, I mean, that says a lot about him and where he's grown to in this team and the way that Barnes has coached him. And for him to have that kind of impact on the game and still be a good team by 19 like that, that's pretty impressive, you know?
Yeah, Murray State's not bad.
Yeah. Yeah, thanks for the call, Rod. It's, I'm not sure how good Tennessee is. I'm not sure how good Murray State is. But the way you played in the second half last night, like, that's what it takes. And with all the other teams, as I look around college basketball, struggling with all types of teams
yeah.
at times, like, you, it's we've talked a lot about football in terms of how well you play this year. The final record doesn't necessarily matter. It's you just want things to happen this year that mean you rebuild faster for years when you could challenge. Basketball's like that kind of every season. Like it really doesn't matter necessarily how well or poorly you play night in, night out now. You just want your team to be getting better so that later in the season, conference play and then tournament time, of course, that you can just be the best basketball team you can be in those moments and play consistently then. And Tennessee last night, I think, went through a lot of those growing pains, still got a win that'll help you in tournament selection process time and all that, and hopefully kind of found some ways they can play better with this group of guys.
Turner was just five assists shy of tying the program record at 19 set by Bill Hand in 1968. It was also the most assists since 1994.
This is from a national standpoint, but Turner is currently third in the nation in assist.
There you go. Watched a few clips from the game and kind of looking for what Seth was talking about previously. So we'll talk a little bit about what Rick Barnes did offensively on the flip side. Got to give him some credit for the way he worked offense a little bit differently in the second half last night. We'll get into that next.
Offense? Look at that. You got to be excited.
I am. Final segment of Hour 2. It's brought to you by Lloyd's Electric Service. Check out Lloyd's Electric Service online for all their services at lloydselectricservice.com. They do commercial, but they also do residential as well. If you're not sure if they can help you out, then just check them out online at lloydselectricservice.com. Tell them you heard about them right here on 3 and Out. Davey's distracting me as I try and tell the good people about people at Lloyd's Electric Service.
Should be used to it by now.
He's eating all his spam, Houston. So there you go.
That's the rules.
Well, the Tennessee lit up the scoreboard last night in the second half. And we talked about – I went back and rewatched portions of Tennessee's first game because Billy and I were debating or just discussing how Tennessee is running the same type of base motion that they ran the year before. And I was wondering if they were going to go to more of the ball screen action and the get out and transition right into ball screens, what Rick Barnes calls like a you can make a quick like corner call to run to a ball screen that way and flip the corner shooter to the other side to open up a half of the court. When I rewatched the first game, they did actually run some of that in Tennessee's opener with the high ball screen with the where you tell the wings just somebody joked that these guys can't just stand in the corner anymore. I mean, literally, that's what you tell the wings to do if you're running the set. They sprint to the corner is the first rule. Then you got a rim runner and a trailing ball screen post player, and Lamonte Turner was getting the high ball screen in the first game. Last night, I noticed just kind of now looking through some different clips from last night's game that when Tennessee was running their what I think Seth called the pin down action, that it was more than just kind of the stand around money that we saw last year with Lamonte Turner. In fact, if you remember Jalen Johnson's kind of short corner jumper in the second half, this is as Tennessee was closing the gap. They cut the lead from 54 to 50 to 54-52. Lamonte came off a curl, drove it into the paint, and then kicked to Jalen Johnson, who had received a flare back screen off that action. So it's nice to see them kind of leveling through things that helps this team kind of have more layers to what they're doing out of that set. And another thing I thought was interesting is the play where Pons had the up and under. That looked like at least the first part of that play is a design stagger to get him a post touch on the block.
And he caught it.
And then he
did
was
like
patient and poised.
Two or three moves, finished it with the up and under.
So that was good to see as well.
Pond's looking like a post player. Felt the guy on his hip, gave him the up, slices underneath for the under and the score. It was a little bit further out. It wasn't just like an easy layup. He had a little touch on the short jumper there. It was a good shot by Pons.
Yeah.
One we have not seen him make consistently. The bench went crazy. You could kind of tell they were very excited to see Pons make post moves and actually finish, you know, without having to just clean up somebody's dunk. Or somebody's miss with a dunk, I should say.
Yeah, we haven't gotten that from Fulkerson yet. He still struggles. Like, I noticed sometimes they would just reject passing him the ball when he was open on the block. That kind of stinks. You kind of hate to see that. But I think he had one opportunity last night where he caught it, and he kind of was deliberate, took a couple dribbles, and just the finishing move just wasn't there. But if Kamwa and Pons and Fulkerson can develop that aspect of the game and be more than just kind of junk cleaners, you know.
Yep.
And obviously we've talked about Pons shooting threes. That's a game changer also. So we'll see. What did you guys think of? I mean, we only got to see just a couple minutes, but did you like Pember and Kent and Gaines coming in the game? And then, like, I don't know. What do you make of them playing? Just, do you think they would have played more? I guess I don't understand is, why did they not put them in the game in the second half once you got up double digits? Was it just like, we tried you guys, we can't trust you?
I mean, it was like 7 minutes to go, and you kind of just kept extending the lead the last. It's not like you had a big double digit lead and
right
12 minutes to play. Like, you were still kind of in a game trying to build the lead with, you know, 5 minutes to play. And I think those guys were just playing so well. It was just, yeah, let them finish.
I kind of wish Barnes would just put one guy in. Like, maybe just put Gaines back in there. Like, you don't have to try and get all three of those guys
That's
to play
fair.
Time, but yeah. Can we just get, like, one at a time? Like, let one of the backup guys play with four starters.
I agree with Houston, and I feel like you had five on the court that were just clicking on all cylinders, and so you weren't wanting to pull any of those guys out at the time. I thought Kent had some decent minutes. Like, I mean, he didn't really do a ton to help you. He did have one big three, but he wasn't hurting you.
That was in the first half, wasn't it?
Yeah. He wasn't hurting you on the defensive end, in my opinion. Pember, either he's not healthy or he's just not ready to be out there.
He's still coming back from that ankle sprain.
That's what I'm saying. So
he
played 2 minutes.
Yeah, I don't know how you'd even be able to tell.
Well, he got beat pretty bad. They had, like, I think a wide open layup. He was just lagging behind his guy.
Yeah. Ankle could be still giving him some issues. Maybe went out, tested it, pre-games, felt good, got out, can't keep up laterally with my man, so it gets yanked.
My opinion on him, like, I'm going to table that for a little bit later on, but from what I saw right there, he's not ready.
I think you have to play these guys, though. But to your point, Nate, that's not how Barnes manages his substitutions or rotations.
That's true.
At
he's
all.
He's like, never been like never. That.
I mean, at times last year, you had Pons, Folky, and Jalen Johnson in the game.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it just never made sense.
Well, Pember, Kent, and Gaines, were they all in the game at the same time?
I believe so. Yeah. It just that's never going to work. And I'm with you. Like, 2 minutes for Gaines is just, I don't know. Like, he made a mistake again. He had the right idea. So if you want to take him out and coach him in that moment, like, mm-hmm. I understand that. But give him another chance to make the right play later on in the game.
Yeah.
And as you said, Houston, we've mentioned it. I mean, he played 10 minutes in game one and shot it 7 times. Like, in the first half, we were struggling to find shots. He could have created a lot of offense by just more than 2 minutes.
I wouldn't necessarily say I agree with the strategy that Barnes has implemented, where it seems like he just puts a lot of guys that you know aren't going to be able to score in at the same time. But I guess from last night, it seemed more of he wanted to get his star players a little bit more rest in a moment and then put them back out together, as if he's like, all right, we might not gain anything on them here, but I think these guys, and that being like the Kent, Pember, they can at least hold enough to where we're not getting farther behind, just to allow – like Pons and Turner to get some rest and then throw them back out on the court together where you might be able to make a run.
Yeah, I mean, Turner got 39 minutes. Pons got 38. 38 minutes for Pons. I mean, I know he had a game of his life, but I mean, this is a guy who has only played, what, like 12, 15 minutes typically?
Yeah.
So clearly you're relying on him. I mean, Bowden scored 26 points in 26 minutes. So he got some rest last night and still balled.
Yeah.
Now, well, granted, the foul trouble. Yeah. The tough one is Josiah James getting 32 minutes, 5 points, 4 shots.
I mean, he's a body. He's keeping you fresh out there with the letting other guys take time off. But we were hoping he would be more.
In 32 minutes, though, I guess I expect one of these stat lines to be a little better.
Well, basically, the first two games have gone as expected, total score wise. It's just Pons has scored what we thought James would.
That's fair. Yeah.
So there you go. Hour 3 coming at you next.